Okay, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight, Laura, from Santa Maria.
Hi, my name is Laura, and I am an alcoholic. I'm really nervous, and I don't know why, because it's you guys. This could be because I'm up here in front of you guys, but thank you, Lynn, for inviting me to speak. Let me tell you how the conversation went when she asked. She called me, and she goes, "Hi, is this Laura?" "Yes, this is Laura." And she goes, "Laura, Laura S?" "Oh, yes." And she goes, "This is Lynn." I said, "Hey, Lynn, what can I do for you?" And I thought she was going to ask for, like, an address for, like, a meeting at my house or something. And she goes, "I am hoping that you would be able to speak on January 27th at the primary purpose." And, like, it went, chirp, chirp. It was just like, and, like, all these things went in my mind. And it was, like, only a split second. But I said, you know what I'm going to say, right? "I know, Laura." "You know what I'm going to say next?" "I know." "Well, you know I'm going to do it." "Like, I don't want to." "Yeah. I know, Laura." And I said, "Well, I've never done this before. This is my first time." She goes, "All you have to do is talk from your heart." And so here I am. That's what we're going to do. I'm going to do. Actually, I was a five-minute speaker. It was my third day in rehab. And my 10 days sober. And here's how that went. I said, they said that we're going to go to a podium speaker tonight. And I said, "Oh, what's a podium speaker?" Thinking like, what do I have to do? Am I going to have to share? And they tell me, you know, there are going to be a couple 5-minute speakers. Then there's going to be the main speaker. And I'm like, inside, I was like, "Oh, okay, good." And inside, I'm like, "Yes, I don't have to read. I don't have to share. I don't have to do a thing. This is terrific, you know." So we get there, and I'm in rehab. So we sit in the front couple rows. And so it's everybody. I'm like one of the 5 people that don't smoke in the whole place. So everyone outside, and I'm sitting there, and like probably right where Shannon is, and these people up at the podium. I was like, "Oh my God, they're talking about me. I know they're talking about me." They think I'm pathetic. You know, all these things went through my mind, and I could see them going. And the girl comes over and talks to me. And she starts talking, and she goes, "Oh yeah, who are you? Blah, blah, blah. I'm Laura." And I said, "I'm Laura." And she goes, "Okay." So then I was like, "Good thing that's over. This talking's done. It's done." So I'm like, relaxed, and my group comes back. We start the meeting. Well, Mary gets up. They're going to start the 5-minute speakers. Mary gets up, and she goes, "Oh, I've had 3 years. This is, oh, no, she was 5 years." And I was like, "Oh, my God, check out Mary. You know, she's got 5 years." And here Joe goes up. He's the next 5-minute speaker. And I'm like, "This is terrific. Joe's got 3 years. Good for him." You know, it's just like, God, one day I want to do that. I want to be up there for in 3 years or something, which, by the way, I'm almost at 3. So here, God's funny. And so I'm like, one day I'm going to do that. And the next thing, that our next 5-minute speaker is Laura. And inside I go, "Ooh, I wonder what another Laura looks like." And I was like, "I wonder how many years she has. This is going to be good. Thank you, God." This is just right. And I start looking around. I'm like, they're like, "Laura, come on up." And I'm like, "Laura, come on up." And I like make eye contact with the guy, and he does this. And I was like, "Oh, God." And I like immediately I get up. And usually I would pass, because that's me. I would pass, and I got up, and I was able to speak. And just like today, you know, I want to pass when you had asked me. But in order for me to succeed in this program, I have to do some things that are very uncomfortable, get me out of myself and out of my thinking of what I used to do, because what I used to do would never come up here. Now I have to in order to grow. And so that's what I have to do. And so that's why I'm just going to keep going. Okay. Okay, so my sobriety date is February 23rd, 2015. That's next month. I will be 3 years. And that is amazing. Amazing. Let's see. I'm going to start off when I was a kid. I think I was pretty much born like this. It was normal for me to have alcohol in my family. My dad drank. And I'm not blaming him or anything, but it was just normal to see you crack open a beer at Saturday morning. You go camping, you drink at 6 a.m. That's normal. That sort of stuff's totally normal for me. I remember when things weren't normal for me was when I was in first grade, I did First Communion. And I'm a Catholic, and so I feel guilty about everything. And so in First Communion, we were going to go ahead and share in our CCD class what we were excited about. And back then it was A through S is where you sat. I mean, A through Z, how you sat in order. So they started off with the A, thank God, because everybody said, oh, I want to have the Holy Sacrament. I'm ready to have the Holy Sacrament. And, you know, it was like, what? Like, dude, it's the blood of Christ, the wine. Isn't everybody excited about drinking the wine? You know, and I was just like, it's the wine. And everybody was saying like, oh, I'm excited because my dad got me, or I got a suit, I'm going to wear that. And I'm like, finally, when it got to like the M's, I started thinking, maybe it's not okay that I think I want to drink wine. Maybe that's bad to say, so I'm not going to say it. So, you know, I was excited about my dad making a crown of carnations for my hair. So that's what I said. But inside I was like, dude, I'm drinking wine on First Communion. And ever since then, I mean, every single time at church, you know, after my First Communion, it was great. You know, I had that warm feeling. Even as a child, I loved it. So every week I would go to church. And I would drink the wine. And so I'm the youngest of four kids, okay? So my brother one day said to me, Laura, why are you drinking the wine? And I was like, because it feels so good. I love it. And he was like, I know. I do too. But have you seen all those old people? They're like 30 years old drinking out of the cup. It's like, you know, like back then 30 was so old. He's like, have you seen their lips? They're like disgusting and chapped and all that's like going into the wine. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that. And so like that was right before like we had to go up to communion. And I'm like, dirty chapped lips, drinking wine. Yes. Dirty chopped lips, nastiness. And I'm like looking at the people like, oh God, oh no, I'm not looking at wine. And I chose the wine, you know, every single time. It's like, even back then I did. It didn't matter. So I would go to any length back then to drink. And now I have to go to any length not to drink. Oh yeah. So even now I go to church once in a while. Once in a while. Because I don't feel, I say God, and so my higher power is God, and it's always going to be, and I've always had that relationship, but this program has brought me closer to God. It's kind of an outline of how church, or how I want to live my life, and I have a closer relationship with God. So I will be using God a lot, and sometimes, like, I'll go into communion with my mom in front of me, and I'll be like, Mom, I'm going to get the blood of Christ tonight. And she's like, oh, no, we're not going to do it. So she'll get her, like, communion and then step to the side and, like, block me from the wine. So I was like, too soon, Mom? Is it too soon? Don't do that. let's see. Okay, so kind of when I was drunk at, you know, all the time in high school. I knew I didn't drink regularly like everybody else. I was already high school dances as a freshman, thinking that it was normal to come home drunk, passed out, people carry you in. I thought that was normal. And so when my daughter went to her first dance and she came home completely sober and nothing, like she came home on time. And I was like, oh my God, I got really blessed. This is amazing. It's amazing. Sorry, I have notes and I was not supposed to go off really notes, but I'm just going to. So I started drinking, and it was wine. Then it was, that wasn't enough, so it was two bottles of wine. And then people started noticing, and people started commenting, and I didn't like that. So what I did was I drank vodka, and then people didn't like that. So I hid the vodka. Like, that was the idea, to hide the vodka, and then have, like, my glasses of wine or whatever with everybody else. And that's just the way it was. And it was exhausting hiding all this drinking. It was exhausting. I was enslaved to it. I always thought that I was a family-oriented person. I love my kids. I love them. And I would do anything for them. And it was so hard that I couldn't stop drinking for them. People used to say, if it's not for you, do it for your kids. And that's what killed, is like, I couldn't do it for my kids. And I almost thought that I did at one point think that they would be better off without me. Because what did I have to offer them, you know? I was drunk at all their birthday parties. That's really hurtful, you know, because here's this child so excited. And I would plan the whole event. I would have all the super beautiful, and then I'd get drunk and ruin it. And even though I've apologized so many times, and what I can do now is try to forgive myself, but it's very difficult for me to forgive myself as a parent. But luckily now they don't have to see me that way. I've been married twice, and I've been divorced twice. I guess it's called codependency. I was sharing this the other night in a meeting. I was brought up thinking the golden rule, which I found out in kindergarten, was do unto others as you would want done to you. So I wanted to live by that rule. And what I did was I tried to live by that rule, and I want to make you happy, you know, like I'm going to do whatever it takes to make you happy. And that's when I learned what codependency was. That's when I started being codependent. I didn't know I was. So what I was doing in my relationships was trying to go out of my way to make this person happy, and I wasn't happy. And I had put all this effort into making this so nice and perfect, and I wasn't feeling appreciated, like, you know, I'm like, what? What? You don't like that? I would love it if somebody did that for me. And so my expectations were always crushed, I thought. Don't they love me? Why don't they react this way to me? Why aren't I, my mom, maybe I'm not as funny and pretty as my mom and sisters tell me I am. You know, like my mom and sisters. You know, and so it was this feeling of not loved, not having a partner to be with. Someone who wasn't walking next to me, and I was giving, I thought, felt so much. And as a mother, I'm the type of mom that wants to do as much as they can for their children, even if it's being at five places at one time. I will make it work. And when I asked for help in the past, nobody came through, so it was like, I'm going to do this on my own. And I made it work. And then it just started getting so overwhelming and so like, I can't do this. Everybody was expecting things from me, and I couldn't cope. And what I did was drink. I coped with alcohol. And all that resentments from, like, not feeling worthy and not feeling good enough in my relationships or as a mother or even as a person, I would just top with alcohol. And that's what I would do. I would just drown everything out with the alcohol. And so I started compromising my values, and I started compromising who I was as a person, and I hated who I'd become. I hated myself. I used to say the worst things to myself on a daily basis, constantly throughout the day. How much I hated myself, how ugly, how disgusting. I would never tell you guys that. I would never say that to you. But here I am telling myself. You know, I was trying to make you happy and in my life, people happy. And it was killing me inside. It was killing me inside. Finally, I don't think that I wanted to intentionally hurt myself on the last day of my drunk, but I almost didn't care. It was like I had the I don't give a shit. So I don't know if you guys have had that, but that's what I had. I had just given up. And in the mornings, it was like I'd try to piece things together of what I did last night. I used to say things to my family, my people that I love the most, that I say that I love the most, I was the most hurtful to. And soon I discovered that I had to isolate myself into my room. And that's what I would do, was drink in my room so I wouldn't say anything negative or bad to my husband at the time or my kids. And in the morning I could see that some of the things that I did, because, like, of course there was, like, pizza, you know, that I had made, or out of bread, you know, and all these concoctions. And I was like, oh my God, no wonder why my stomach hurts, you know, 'cause I ate this and that. Oh my gosh. And then seeing, like, the kids' face of disappointment in me, and then me promising them, I'm not going to do this tomorrow. I'm so sorry about last night. And swearing, today I'm going to get sober. Today's going to be the last day. And then by the time I had gotten hydrated and all the kids to where they were, 7 o'clock I'd be home at night, and I had already had a bottle in my car, in my hand, you know, drinking. And that's just the way it was, and it was insanity. I tried to go to, well, actually I did. I went to the Thursday night meeting, Shannon's meeting. I looked into the online, and it took me about a month to actually go to a meeting. And it was always the Thursday night women's meeting, because I thought, okay, that's somewhere I might feel comfortable. And so I drove by quite a bit and didn't show up. And I also looked on the website, and it said, reading it, and I studied it. So the first day it said, on Monday night, chips last Monday. And it says, chips last Monday. What am I supposed to bring this week? So I waited to the next week to the online thing to see what people brought. Where is this posted? Am I supposed to bring a veggie tray? Because I like veggie trays, and I'm going to bring that. Maybe I should bring chips. Okay, I like sour cream, and I like barbecue. Maybe I should bring it. And I wish I would have. I didn't bring it because I was like, no, that's kind of, no, you just wait. You'll bring it the next time. So I go to the meeting, and I'm, like, looking in the kitchen, like, there's no chips. I wonder what they're supposed to bring. Maybe they don't do it anymore. Who knows? Then they started talking about Bob, Dr. Bob, which happens to be my next door neighbor, Bob Okerblom. And I thought, they were talking about my neighbor, Dr. Bob Okerblom. And I come home and I'm like, wow, Bob is such a good guy. I love him being my neighbor. So I went to Shannon's, the Thursday night meeting, a couple times, and I probably lasted two, almost 3 months in there. And then I had a, you know, like I graduated from this program. Totally graduated, because what was I getting out of it? You know, I've already like, oh, and in the meetings, everybody would like read the steps. I couldn't hear it. And I was like, dude, if they just tell me what the steps are, I can just do it. Where they were reading it every single time. I just couldn't hear it. I couldn't hear it. It's crazy. So after 2 months of, two or 3 months of going, I decided that I didn't need Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. And I thought I could do it on my own. And for about a month, I did. And then my grandma passed away, and at the funeral, everybody did a toast. And I had a little tiny swig like this much in my glass, and that was it. Cool. I got this. Then it happened to me in the next week, and it just progressed. And I just went crazy. And that's when so much hurt, and I was hurting people. I was hurting myself. And so when two of my friends, I have two normal friends and that aren't alcoholic, and I let them know, like, they knew I struggled with alcoholism. The crazy thing is I didn't know I was an alcoholic, really. Like, I didn't know, like, what it meant, what it was, even though I thought I knew I had a problem, but I didn't know. So I was so glad when I found out I was an alcoholic, like, in rehab. I couldn't tell you how happy I was. I mean, like, I don't, this is a disease. Like, it just is an obsession. Like, I can't stop once I take, I'm allergic. Wow, that's amazing. Like, it's not my fault completely. It was a good feeling. The last time I drank, it might get emotional for me, but what happened was I started drinking on a Friday night. Of course, it's hard alcohol. Vodka was my thing, and whiskey I like to get once in a while just to switch it up. I started drinking, and then Saturday morning, I got pretty hammered on Friday night. Saturday, did my kid stuff I had to do, and that's so sad I say it like that, because that's how I was back then. You know, I just get the kid stuff done. Then I was done probably like at 5 o'clock in the afternoon or 5 at night, and it was on. I already had two bottles shoved in my closet, and I started drinking. And they're not the little bottles. They're the big bottles. Then by 12:30 at night, I need more. I can't drive. I wasn't one of those people that was I didn't drink and drive for some odd reason. My sister had an accident. She got a DUI in high school. And I think that hurt me, like that scared me straight almost from drinking and driving. So I just never did when I was, I'm sure I drove, but I don't recall ever like waking up and that's where, I mean, where I was in the car. It just wasn't the norm for me to go out. So, but my bright idea was to run a mile and a half at 1 a.m. to go to the liquor store, which would have been Food Max, actually, because Rite Aid was closed. And that's what I did. I ran all the way drunk, but I ran because I was afraid that I wasn't going to get there fast enough. And I remember buying two huge bottles of vodka and walking home. And I didn't, for some reason, get a bag. I don't know why. I shoved them right in here, you know, like this, and then drinking and shoving them back. And then, yeah, crazy, huh? So I drink, I don't know how much, to where I pass out like normal, you know, no big deal. That's nothing new to me. I wake up in the morning and I'm still just like disgusted with my life and me. And I just go ahead and start drinking. And I remember praying to God, like always, please, God, help me. I don't want to live like this anymore. Why aren't you helping me? But he was helping me. Because this day was a blessing in disguise for me. And so I started texting my friends, and I was hammered. And, you know, I was saying how unhappy I was, and that, yes, I have been drinking. And one of my friends says, well, I'm coming over. And I was like, the hell you are. You're not coming over. I don't want you coming over. How embarrassing. And it's 11 o'clock in the morning. And so I drink the rest of my bottle. And I didn't know I had drunk both of those bottles. You know, I thought I just finished one. And so I use the restroom and I go back to my bed where I was just going to, on my bed like I normally do when I'm going to pass out. And for some reason, I get up. It was like the grace of God picking me up, the angels, and I walk out my front door and my back door around my house and out the back gate. And I sit on my lawn waiting. While on my lawn, the next thing I remember is I woke up in the hospital. Apparently on my lawn, while I was waiting, I died. And I was resuscitated back to life. And I woke up the next day, I can't remember, with tubes down my throat. And I was shackled and tied to the bed because I was struggling so bad, trying to rip everything out. And I guess that's a good sign. I'm trying to rip everything out because that makes you kind of normal. Nobody knew when I woke up if I was going to be with it or not with it, because nobody knows how long I was out or out for. No, I did not see the light. But I think God gifted me with my last memory of that day so I can remember this. I remember texting my friends. I remember being coherent. They showed the doctors in the ER my messages. My blood alcohol level was 0.44 that day. And that's death, you know? And so they said, this is our text messaging 45 minutes ago. And he goes, there's no way. There is no way that she could have texted these things. They are so coherent and so right on. And I know it's God. I know it was. I know it was God. It's because, I mean, how could somebody walk at 0.44? God lifted me up, had me walk around. If he hadn't done that, it could have been too late. Somebody could have found me too late in my room. You know? If I would have walked out the front door, I never go out that door and all the way around. Never. Why would I do that? Because, like, what if my kids would have seen me getting resuscitated back to life? They didn't have to go through that. See that. If that guy would have mowed his lawn the next day, it was my neighbor who called 911. If he would have mowed it the day before, the day after, I might not have gotten help. And if I hadn't have died, I might have not have been able to help this get to where I am, to help fight this disease. Because that's what it took me to, death, in order to go forward. That was my bottom. I shall turn that around, which I thought I did pretty good. Another thing that keeps catching my, which I will never forget too, when I was in the hospital, people said, I could overhear them. Well, she's probably learned her lesson. She's not going to do this again. And inside I thought, oh God, I'm probably going to do this again because I don't know how to stop. I don't know how to stop. And so I said I was going to go to rehab, and I did. So 7 days later, it took a week for me to get a bed at CRC in Santa Barbara is where I went. And it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. And I didn't want to go because I would be away from my kids for 30 days. And one of my friends that saved my life that night, that day, because if it wasn't for them, I'm sure I wouldn't be here. So they were my angels that day, too. So every time I have a birthday on that day, the last 2 years, we've gotten together and we celebrate it. And I always treat them together because they did save my life, along with God, you know, of course. I forgot where I was. I went to rehab. Oh, yes, I was in, I forgot, did I say that I was, I'd probably do this again. Sure. Yeah. I would probably do that again, and that's sad. So I went to rehab. Oh, my friend said to me, you can either be away from your children for 30 days or for the rest of your life. And I thought, oh, my God, that's right. I could like that because I almost did. And that hit me when she said that. It put a fire underneath me to do this program. And I loved rehab. I don't belong there anymore, but I did because it was so easy for me. I didn't have to do this. I didn't have expectations put on me. I didn't have to try to put out your fire and put out your fire and try to fix this over here for you and try to do this for you and clean and do this and do that. I was exhausted and try to hide my alcohol. I couldn't do it. And so being there was like, okay, I was able to breathe. It was easy. I wouldn't say it was easy, but I wanted to do my steps. We had to do one, two, and three in rehab. And it was easy for me compared to some other people because I believed in God already. And then I had that divine intervention on February 22nd. And so I knew. I was feeling the Spirit in me. And so I did, my steps and I came out of rehab, and within the second day I asked for a divorce, because I knew if I didn't get out of my relationship, I was going to die. And my sponsor said, you know, it's like a baby mobile. Okay. And when you take away something right here, the mobile goes like this. And that's what we did. We took away alcohol. And so mom wasn't in the regular circle anymore. Mom had changed a little bit. And nobody liked that because I actually did what I said. You know, it wasn't like, me no care. Go for it. You know, it's like, me no care. Because I would do that. And, you know, I was tired of not taking action. You know, people would tell me a whole bunch of BS and didn't take action themselves. And so I couldn't do it anymore. So within, I think it was my fifth month of sobriety, I moved out and got my own place where I'm at now. And in my sixth month, it was in August, and I got this overwhelming feeling that I wanted to start a meeting. And it just was like, and that's what happened. And I wanted to talk to Shannon because she had a meeting on Thursday night, and which I had all these questions. I even had a list because I like lists. And I had this list to ask her. And I don't know if you remember this, but I remember this. And I said, I don't even know what my question was. I was like, Shannon, what did you think? What did you think when you started out? And she goes, it saved my life. And I said, that's all I need to know. That was it. Done. End of conversation. And it has. That meeting has saved my life. And, you know, I love the ladies in there. I love them so much. They become my closest friends. And sometimes I don't want them there. I even had somebody share that they didn't want to come tonight, but I came anyways. I'm so glad I came. This is so nice. And it was my turn to share. And I was sharing, you know what? I didn't want you guys coming over tonight, but I'm so glad you came. Yeah. God's sponsorship is what I put sponsor on here. I could go 45 minutes on what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now, and a comedy act with my sponsor, because She's amazing. She is amazing. What it used to be like, I didn't want to call my sponsor. I didn't want to talk to my sponsor because I thought I was a nuisance. I thought I was a burden. I thought that she would think you're so stupid. So then I would call and kind of just, oh, yeah, hi, okay, great. And then I got this brilliant idea that, hey, I could just talk to my sponsor in my head. And so I would see my sponsor, and I said, oh, my God, you did so wonderful in my head the other day. You talked me through it. And she goes, I did I? I was like, oh, yeah. It took 3 days. And she goes, why don't you call me next time? And so I started calling. And or I would share in meetings. And she goes, that's when you're supposed to call me, honey. Call me. And I said, oh, those are things I'm supposed to call you. She's like, yeah, because it's not just, I said, I thought I'm supposed to call you about alcohol when I'm craving or when I'm doing this. And she goes, no, it's living without alcohol. How to live without alcohol, how to react. What are you supposed to do? And I was like, oh, gosh, she's so brilliant. A few times I've called. And she waves this magic wand. It's like, bibbidi bobbidi boo. You know, and I'm like, whoa. One time I called, I'll never forget this, and I was like, okay, I did the praying. I've already had that talk with you, and then I decided I was going to just call you because it's already going in my head. And she goes, hey, why don't you just go to a meeting? Go to a meeting? Wow, what a concept. I couldn't even remember to go to a meeting. And of course I do, and I feel like so good. You know, like, wow, she's so smart. Go to a meeting. I love her. I love her. Oh, man, this one time I'd gone on vacation, you know, with my son, my 11-year-old son, and he brings his friend, and it's just the three of us. And usually, like, when I go on vacation, I have to swim. I have to, you know, and I don't mind it. I like to play. And I'm usually the human floaty in this pool, all that sort of stuff. Okay, well, he brought his friend, so I didn't have to, you know. And I was, like, thinking about alcohol, you know, sitting on the lawn chair, watching the kids in the pool. And I was like, God, this is weird. I'm on vacation. And now I'm thinking about alcohol. Not that I thought I was going to drink. I was pretty sure I was. And I was in a pretty, really good spot at that moment. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and text my sponsor. And I said, it's so weird. I'm, like, thinking about alcohol. Not that I'm, like, thinking I'm going to do it or anything. I just keep, like, thinking about it or what I used to do. And, like, when I'd go on vacation and how I would maneuver and manipulate things. And she goes, we're alcoholics. That's what we do. We think about alcohol. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it's normal? Like, this is great. This is great. Okay, I'm normal. Like, as an alcoholic. It's great. I put growth in here. I shared the other day, like, oh my God, I'm growing, and like, I don't even realize I'm doing it, you know? And I was like, I'm so proud of myself. This is what I share at my women's meeting, okay? We can get intimate and we share a little bit more details. And I said what happened, and I was like, you know, and I realized what I did. You guys, I paused. That's amazing. I didn't react how I used to do it. I paused. Yay. Then the next meeting, my turn to share. You guys, I didn't pause today. That was last week. This is this week. It's gone. Yeah, I remember calling my sponsor and saying, oh my God, that's what she did last week. And that's what I would do. And she goes, those are called feelings. You know what you're feeling? And I was like, oh, I have feelings? I do? That's what that feeling is? It's horrible. It's horrible feeling. I used to just drown it. I never had those feelings. And when I was a kid and when I, at my adult life, you don't show your feelings. I used to never show my feelings. I never cried. I just thought that was a huge sign of weakness. Huge sign to show anything. It was like, bring it. What are you going to do? you know? You're not going to hurt my feelings. And deep down you were. But now what I think is I have tons of feelings. It's hard for me to control right now, but still it's like I'm only 2 and almost 3. I got to give myself a little bit of a break because I would drown it for whatever years. And now I think it's courage. I think it takes a lot of courage to show your feelings, to reach out. I'm a sponsor, which is great too. And I was trying to tell, I see people that are younger in this program and like at their age, like reaching out, it's amazing. Texting somebody, it's amazing. It took me 2 years to reach out, 2 years to kind of get that over with, like, I'm not a nuisance. My sponsor said that it actually helps her too. When I call, and even hearing her voice just changes me like that, you know, everything's going to be okay. And then, like, you know, I have friends in this, AA, which I didn't think you guys were going to be my friends at all. I remember seeing somebody the first day, like I went into a meeting and I was like, oh my God, I know them. Can they see me? Like, oh God. Oh. It's like they see me. I know they do. There's only 10 people here. And those are the people that I go to, you know, because I can, this is what we do sometimes. Like, we get to say really mean things for like a minute, and I just like, blah, 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 blah. And then we go, okay, now that that's out, let's get started on this, you know? And it's like, okay, we got that out of the way. Now let's figure this out. And we'll end up laughing. Like, it's so funny. I was like, I can't believe, like, I was upset 10 minutes ago from the whole thing. And it's just amazing. I'm really big into the steps. I wanted to do my steps right away. I wanted to get this crap out. It's not like I was super thrilled about trying to do the 4th step and the 5th step and the 9th step, but I needed to because I know me as I am not allowed to hold that stuff in because if I do, I'm going to end up dying. I will hold that in and hold resentments, and I can't live like that anymore. When I first started doing my steps, like especially on step 4, I was writing my list, all that sort of stuff, and I was getting pissed. Like, I was at the top of my resentment list, that's for sure. Because it was hard for me to forgive myself. And I always thought everything was my fault. Everything was my fault. And I remember one time I was just like, my pendulum just went whoosh, and I was like, well, it bothers me now. I'm sure you guys remember this too. Like, the women remember me like, oh no. Crazy. And then I'd cry like a minute later. And felt bad. And then I had to make amends. Like, I was wrong. You're right. It was wrong. I had an incident the other day. Somebody asked me to help lend a helping hand in the in this program. They asked me for help, and that's what I did. I tried to do my best at helping them, but I knew I love this person, and I've tried to help this person before. But this person isn't ready. So I picked this person up, gave them some human compassion, did a little bit love, hug, and had to drop them back off. And that's all I could do. And, of course, like, I was crying because I didn't want that for them. And I had this struggle inside thinking, like, I'm not doing enough. I could have done more. I could do more. I could do this. I should do that. I should do that. And so I call my sponsor because that's what I do now. I don't wait 3 days. I don't have a conversation with her in my head that much anymore. um, What I do is I call her because I need to be proactive with myself. I do. And I know that about me. And so what she said to me was, no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And she got me right there, right then and there. And I knew that that person, it's no human, there's nothing I could do. There was nothing I could do. And I shared this at a meeting the other day, and that was powerful. It was really powerful, that no human power could relieve our alcoholism. And I know God had relieved mine. And so that's what I wanted to tell him, this person, was they said, Laura, they kind of know my story. They kind of know, we've known each other for about 30 years. So they kind of knew me. They knew me pretty well during high school, stuff like that, and the hurt and shame that I would feel, stuff like that. And he said, all the things that happened, you've overcome them now. Like, and I said, I wanted to tell him because he couldn't hear anything that I was going to say, so I could only just listen to him. And I wanted to tell him, no, it's not me. It's not me. It's God. I didn't do this. No human power could have relieved my alcoholism. I had to surrender. And I did surrender. And I have to surrender multiple times, but because this disease will make me forget. It will be cunning, baffling, and powerful. And that's what it does to me. And that's why I like need to hold on to you guys. And I wanted to tell him that too, but there was no talking any sense into him. You can't talk to somebody when they're not with it. And nobody could have said anything to me. Nobody to change me. I had to go through, like I said, death in order to change. And now I do feel like I am important. I actually kind of like myself. You're so funny. You know, and I have my good days and bad days, but you know what? I react differently now because I don't want to be that person that I used to be. I react in a way of asking for help, and that's huge for me. That's huge for me because I always thought I could do it on my own, and knowing now that I can't. So I'm Laura, and I'm an alcoholic, and thank you so much for allowing me to grow tonight and be a part of this beautiful journey. So thank you.
Lisa, thank you very much for leading the meeting, and our readers, thank you very much. And for the birthday people, happy birthday to you. Let's give another hand for Laura.